In our new series, Debut Discussions, we're asking debut authors to tell us their story, not only the story in the novel they wrote, but the journey they took to hold that book in their hands. On today's episode, we welcome Sophie Wan. Sophie is a graduate of UC Berkeley and spent too long writing emails before she picked up writing fiction. As a Bay Area native, she has no choice but to enjoy outdoor activities, but prefers those where her feet remain firmly on the ground. She's currently shivering her way through grad school in Philadelphia, although it's kind of springy right now. It's kind of springy. You're getting better?
It has gotten warm.
Okay. All right. Her debut novel, Women of Good Fortune, is out now. Welcome to Pop Fiction Women, Sophie.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're so excited to discuss the novel, but we like to start with our debut authors and go a little back in time to you as a reader, because writers always begin as readers. So what is your story as a reader of what you were like and what books you were interested in?
I read so many books when I was younger. The library was my favorite place to go. And I used to live, when I was really small, I think my parents moved us to where this new library was being built. And it was like a 10-minute walk away. So it was a dream. I would go there every day after school to look for books to check out. And I mean, I think I got started with a lot of the classics. Like, I read a lot of Magic Treehouse. I also had this collection of illustrated classics. Like, I don't know if they do those anymore.
They do.
They do. Yes.
I love those books. I read them so many times. And and I think, like, I was always checking out books. I would get in trouble in school for reading under the desk. My parents were like, you need to stop reading so much. It's affecting your grades. And their form of punishment for me was to actually stop me from going to the library or like checking out books. So that was how much I loved reading. I don't have as much time now, but I still try to read around 50 books a year. And I kind of read across, like, anything that I hear is good, I'll pick it up. If it's like a spicy romance novel, a gripping thriller, or a fantastic fantasy series with really good world building, I'm open to reading anything.
Yeah. Sophie, you're in good company here. Let me tell you exactly how we do it. Yeah. Okay, so bridge the gap for me. You're clearly an avid reader, love to get lost in these worlds. When do you know, I can maybe do this? Do I have a story to tell? Am I going to start writing something? Is it going to be a short story? Is it going to be a novel? When did you think, I might be a writer?
I think I was about 11 when I started thinking that I wanted to try writing stuff of my own. So I was reading, like, there were some books that I would read and then I'd be like, oh, I really wish there was a different ending. And I was like, let me just go and write an alternate ending on my own. I used to write some fan fiction. I'm not going to say what kind because that's too embarrassing. But I think a lot of my start was taking what already existed and seeing where I could go with it. And then I think as I sort of, you know, did more and more of that, then I was like, oh, maybe I should come up with something that's entirely my own. And I think I kind of started going off into original fiction when I was in high school. But when I was in college, I didn't have as much time to focus on writing. I actually wanted to minor in creative writing when I was in college, but I could not get into any creative writing classes.
Oh, wow.
And I kind of had a crisis of faith where I was like, I don't think I'm actually good enough at this to try to write a book. So I sort of took a break from it and went and got a normal adult person job. And it wasn't until the pandemic when I had a bit more time when I started thinking, hey, maybe I should actually try this again and actually take it seriously and try to be more disciplined about the way that I approach this and see if anything comes out of that. And that's when I actually finished a full-length book.
Oh, wow. I don't think there's any writer that has the perseverance to get to publishing if they don't have a crisis of faith in their background. I mean, we've talked to so many, like whether it's an early, you know, you're talking about college, we've talked to people who've said high school, their teachers like, no, this is never going to be for you, or even just early rejections. So I do think that is part of what sustains like that drive to be better at it. What did you major in college?
I was an undergrad business major. And after I graduated, I did consulting. And now I'm in business school. So yeah, it's still very much a part of my life.
Yeah, it's like law school for me. It's like I wanted to be a writer, but I didn't think that was really a thing. And what a real thing is being a lawyer. And so I'll be a lawyer and I'll always have that. But what I really want to do is write fiction.
Yeah. Same here.
Yep.
But you've done it. You've done it now. And you, as you said, you're still, you know, in business school and pursuing that side of you as well. So the pandemic comes and you are like, I'm going to be disciplined about this. I'm going to actually try to commit to this. So tell us from that, then where the idea of this book came from. And
was that book Women for Good Fortune?
I was just going to say, was that this one? Yeah.
It was not. Actually wrote, so the first book that I finished is, I didn't even do anything with it. It was just beyond help, even though I did work on it a little bit and revised it. And then the second book that I wrote was the one I got my agent with, but that was not the one that sold. Mm-hmm. And so Women of Good Fortune, I think, could technically be called my third finished book. And the idea for it, I mean, I started writing it when the book that got me my agent was on submission. It was like a good way of distracting myself from that process. And I think the idea came about from, like, my friend was telling me about a Chinese wedding that he had been to and how the red envelopes were being collected in a glass safe. And he was kind of like, oh, what if you did something that was like Wedding Crashers with Ocean's 11? And I was kind of like, haha, very funny. But then the idea sort of lodged itself in my head. And I was thinking, well, like, I don't want to write about men. I want to write about women. And at the same time, I had done a lot of reading about this idea of the leftover woman in China. And I thought it was just really fascinating that there was this negative connotation with it, when a lot of the times these are women that are very successful and who have figured out their lives, but everything kind of gets distilled down to, oh, what's, are you single or are you going to get married? Yeah. So I thought, like, it would be really interesting to kind of explore this identity, but also have that fun element of a wedding, of a heist happening, because I think that's the kind of stuff that I wanted to read during that time. Like, I was trapped at home. I wanted something that felt like a fun adventure, but that wasn't just that. And also explored the motivations of the characters at its core.
Right. Because there's so much about what these women desire, freedom, and whatever they want. Money is central to it. This is a good time to tell our listeners maybe what Women of Good Fortune is about, the elevator pitch for this novel.
Yeah, Women of Good Fortune is a contemporary fiction novel, and it's about a reluctant bride who gets a proposal from a man that she's not really in love with, but who is wealthy and handsome, and everyone thinks she should marry. But what she wants most is to be free from all of this. And she teams up with her two best friends to do a heist on her own wedding, because they know that the red envelope gifts, which will contain money from the guests, will be enough to get each of them what they want. And along that process of planning and of executing this heist, they start questioning what they had assumed about their friendship, as well as coming across some unforeseen obstacles. And I will leave it at that.
Yes. Absolutely.
That's perfect. So you mentioned the novel does follow three women, Lulu, Jane, and Rena. And I understand you had a little help in naming them. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so I mean, I had their names first, and then afterwards I was like, well, they're Chinese, so they definitely need a Chinese name. And there's a lot that goes into the thinking of naming kids in China. So I went to my parents for help because I am not that well versed in Chinese characters. My knowledge of Chinese characters is very limited. And so I went to my mom and dad and I said, can you help me come up with the names for these characters? And I had the pinyin, like basically like the phonetics of their names, but there could be so many options in terms of the actual Chinese character that represents those names. So that was what I went to my parents for help with. And I think that process was really, it was so fun to be able to work with my parents more and tell them, share this book with them and have them kind of leave an imprint on the book in this way by naming them. And I think like the names that they came up with are so beautiful and I think so representative of each of the personalities of the three women.
Yeah, that is, that's that. Really special. It's like the number one question I get asked. It's like, how do you name your characters? It's a magical process. So the opening sentence of this novel is from Lulu's perspective, and it pulls you right in to the story with intrigue. And it's, the scene is, you don't know it when you're reading the first sentence, but the scene is she's picking out wedding dresses and you imagine that this is going to be a beautiful over the top thing. And the first sentence is, sometimes Lulu considers whether life would be better if she had been born a cockroach.
So I
loved that. I absolutely loved. I'm like, okay, if that doesn't get me reading, especially knowing what's going on, you know, reading the back jacket copy kind of, I was intrigued. Tell us about Lulu and where you wanted to start this novel.
Yeah, I think with Lulu, I really wanted to write about a character who is a little bit quieter because I think there was a really big trend of you have these badass fiction, like, women leads, and you know they know how to kick butt and they can use weapons, and I feel like there was some overlooking of that quieter character who maybe she's not the most outspoken, but that doesn't mean that she's incredibly strong and loyal and willing to be there for her friends. So that was where the character of Lulu came from. I wanted to kind of craft a character who I think starts off a little like, you know, she'll kind of go with whatever everyone is telling her. And because the way that she's been raised kind of tells her that she can't really do anything about the circumstances that she's been in, but she grows stronger through the course of the story and begins to kind of come into her own values and beliefs. So I think that's where it kind of starts. And I think that first sentence really encapsulates how she feels, where it's like, yeah, I know I should be grateful for all of this, but sometimes I feel like maybe it would just be simpler and easier if I were an insect.
Yeah. And if your basic, your survival was the name of the game, right? That you were just trying to survive and adapt, as she says. I thought that was fantastic. And yeah, she is quieter and she's very deliberate. It's like the tortoise and the hare, right? These kick-ass women that you're talking about, they're the hare and Lulu's the tortoise. And she's going to keep going one step at a time. And I just feel like she's going to win the race. She's got it.
But I love that opening line. And did you, that sentence, was that there from the beginning? Or like, did you kind of, you know, some people say I wrote the prologue and not a word of it changed through a million edits. Like, what about that line?
I actually did have a prologue for the book.
Oh, okay.
And I ended up taking it out because I think that first sentence, based on feedback from my editor too, that first sentence packed enough of a punch. But I also really liked my prologue. It kind of took place, it took place when she actually was proposed to. So it was also really fun to write. But yeah, I think ultimately the book starts off stronger with that first first sentence and with that first chapter from Lulu's point of view.
It is very strong. I don't know it, but prologues, I had no idea prologues are very controversial.
They are, yes.
Yeah.
Though very, I feel like they're very common now, but maybe, yeah. So let's talk about Rena then. So Rena is ambitious and smart, but she is tired of the sexism she experiences at work. We understand Rena came to you first, I think. So tell us about that and about your development of her.
Right. I think she is probably the most relatable character for me and as well for a lot of people, a lot of my friends who have read the book, because she is very much balancing what she wants out of her career with the like the biological clock and also her desire for kids and like for that more like domestic life. So I think it was, I feel like she came to me much more fully formed because I kind of knew from the beginning that she would want to freeze her eggs. And like, what does that mean when, you know, you need the money to do something like that, but you're also struggling with this, with not having enough time and trying to think of how to prioritize your career and prioritize your personal life. And then I also really, I think for her, I also knew that Vic was going to be a really, like, I knew that he was going to play a big role in her life and kind of how she thinks about how she prioritizes elements of her personal life. So I think that's why, to me, like, her story, I could kind of map it out from the beginning to the end.
Yeah,
but that doesn't mean it was easy because there was just so much that I could have written about her, and I ended up taking out a lot because I needed to focus on Lulu and Jane as well.
Well, so that was my question. Then you bring in the third point of view is Jane. How did you know you wanted her point of view and thought I need to tell it from her side as opposed to through the rest of the story, you know, through the other points of view? You could have gotten Jane anyway, but you gave her a specific point of view. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
I mean, I think her voice is just so unique and it stands out a lot more compared to Rena and Lulu's voices. Yeah. And I think that element was really fun for me to write. So that's why I really enjoyed writing Jane's point of view. I think at the same time, there's a lot that's going on in her internally that I wouldn't have been able to explore if I had kept the points of view to Rena and Lulu. Like, I think a lot of what she struggles with around self-worth, around whether she believes that she is worthy of being loved, and a lot of, you know, the thoughts that she's kind of troubled by from the way that she grew up and the things that her mother has said to her, I think a lot of that is, it feels a lot closer from her point of view versus if I had tried to write it from someone else's point of view. And I have gotten feedback that, like, sometimes people read from her point of view and they just say it's really hard to read it from her point of view because you can just tell how much she doesn't like herself in the beginning. But I think that's so important because I think that is such a big part of being a woman sometimes, like the harsh things that we say to ourselves that we would never say to anyone else.
That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I appreciated her for being different, but also for her arc and her journey. Yeah.
So when you were writing Women of Good Fortune or before, were there craft books you relied on? Did you do any classes? Like, tell us, once you decided to sort of recommit to the writing, did you use any resources like that to help you?
I did not use any craft books. I think I did read a little segment of based off of a recommendation from a friend, because I definitely struggled with the heist portion. I was like, I have no idea how to write this. And what helped was watching a lot of movies, outlining what happens in those movies to understand what the crucial beats are. And then a friend of mine told me, you should read Save the Cat. And there's like a specific chapter in the novel writing version that's like about the Golden Fleece, I think. Yep. And that was the most transferable to the heist portion of the story. So I kind of looked at that to get a sense of like, oh, like here are like the main points that you should have. But I think what helped the most was just using existing content and seeing how it was structured, because then I had an idea of, okay, here's like the general flow and here are the areas where you can introduce obstacles to make mm-hmm. the dramatic tension kind of like ratchet up the dramatic tension. So that helped a lot. But I think overall, I typically read more books that are focused on like inspiration. So feeling that desire to write and be excited by the story, I think that's really critical for me, especially when it comes to finishing something.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah. And are you in a writing group, or did you workshops or anything like exchanging, getting feedback, or were you working with your agent and then ultimately your editor solely?
With this book, I got a lot of help from my agent. And I think I also had I have a really wonderful critique partner. So she actually helped me a lot. After I outlined the heist, I basically sent her the entire detailed outline. And I was like, can you read this and tell me if this makes sense or if I'm just crazy? And she kind of went through and was asking, like, kind of like poked holes in it and was like, oh, like, I don't really know about this, I don't really know about that. And that process of workshopping it, I think, really got the book to where it needed to be. So I think during that time, what I relied on most was feedback from my agent as well as feedback from my critique partner.
Okay. And you mentioned your agent. So you also said that you got an agent and with the first book you wrote that's not out. Is that the same agent that you've stuck with, or did you re-query when you wrote this one?
It is the same agent. I love my agent. They are incredibly supportive, and they were so excited about the idea. Like, I was already working on it when I got their offer of representation. And like, I told them, like, I gave them a soft pitch during the offer call, and they were like, that sounds amazing. And I feel like I really like our relationship, because I kind of come out of nowhere with ideas and they're like, yeah, that sounds great. And I think every time after I talk to them, it just makes me very excited about whatever idea I'm working on. And I think that's what I really need from an agent. They're just really communicative. I know that I can always count on them to, you know, reply to my emails on time and make me feel better about something. So yeah, I feel like they're kind of playing the role of professional partner, but also therapist a little bit.
Yeah. And cheerleader. Fine. My agent is definitely my cheerleader. And I appreciate that very much, because especially in those beginning stages when you're like, is this an idea? Like, sometimes you're so excited and then sometimes you're not. Then you have a crisis of confidence. And you're like, is this trash? And for them to just be consistently excited and in your corner and supporting you, like, should we jump on a call? Should we figure this out? Like, that is such a gift that I think people sometimes overlook when they're just like, I want someone who will help me, you know, be editorial. I'm like, don't undervalue the cheerleader part of it.
Yeah.
That's so hard.
Yeah. Right. So you get your agent, and I guess you went on submission twice, as have I. And I have a book that didn't sell too. So tell us about your submission process, or it's up to you how much you want to share, but we're really curious about Women of Good Fortune, how that went.
I've written about the submission process in my newsletter, because I think failure is not something that authors often talk about, especially, like, I think the reality is a lot of people fail to sell one book or two or more than that before they end up selling their actual book. Yeah. And my experience with the first time I went on submission was very, very hard. Like, I think emotionally, I struggled a lot, because I kind of felt like, oh, I've gotten so close. Like, I did the querying process, I got an agent, and now it's kind of just like fizzling out here, and maybe this is as far as I am ever meant to go. And I think at the time, that was also the time that I was on Twitter/X. And I think that was hard too, because all you really see on social media is the celebration, because that's the stuff that usually gets upvoted. Right. And I was like, I just kind of constantly felt like I was falling behind. And so that was really difficult. And I think I started pulling away more from social media and just thinking like, you know what, I need to get back into the frame of mind of I'm excited about this story. I'm working on this story. Like, this should just be my world. Yeah. And I think that helped a lot with getting the book to the finish line. And then I think that second submission process was just so different from the first, because like even from the very start, there was a lot of interest, and the book ended up selling, I think, in about like 5 days. It was like kind of it went out on a Wednesday, and then we heard back on like a Friday, and then there was like all this stuff with the deal, and my poor agent, I think, was working over the weekend. And it was just a whirlwind. So I think the experience can just be so different from book to book. And I don't think enough people know that, it can be really hard, but it can also, like, a lot of it is so dependent on luck too.
Luck and timing. And kind of all the things coming together. Yeah, I went on submission with my first book, I think it was like 7 or 8 years ago. And I just, there was so much less I know it still is not part of the conversation, but there was even less then. And I really thought like, I should just pack it in. I got this far. And yeah, you're like, I got an agent. But even before that, I got an idea for a book. I
wrote a book.
I finished it. I made it good enough. And I wrote a query letter, and I got an agent, and I did, and it doesn't sell. And really, I was like, that's it. That's all it is. I've failed. I got there and I failed. And so, I try to talk about it as much as I can, but you're right. It's not as easy to celebrate, right? The failures. It doesn't feel, it's hard to set that tone. And often the wins are what everyone wants to celebrate. The failures are kind of singular, right? It's just me. I didn't do it. Yeah, but I love that.
But those are milestones too. Like,
yeah, they are.
Yeah.
When I got my first rejection on my query, I was like, whoa, it's out there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real Somebody agents are looking
doesn't
at it.
Want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
People are interacting with my work. Yeah. Absolutely.
But do you feel, because I think, I don't want to put words in Corinne's mouth, but I think she said this, that this debut of yours, though, is the book you were meant to debut. Like, that book, your prior one, really now in looking back, it's like, okay, that really wasn't it. Like, this is the book you are meant to become a published author with. Do you feel like that?
I do feel that way. Yeah. I think when I was writing this book, I just poured so much of myself into it. I kind of threw everything that I had into it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, if it's going to be any book, it must be this one. And I mean, I was so excited when it sold, because I think this is the story that I would have loved to read when I was younger and in the library and looking for books about Chinese women and like people who look like me. And so I'm really excited that it's at this point I'm able to publish a book that's set not in the US but in China, and that where like Chinese culture is very much a central part of each of these characters' identities.
Although Tracy Sierra said she wants to go back. She just debuted with Night Watching, and she said she's going to go back to that one that didn't sell. She had one that didn't sell
so
as well.
That's so funny. I was actually just listening to the podcast episode that you two did with her.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, she said that. I don't mind. Mine is in the drawer for good, but
That is an unusual answer, though. I still think that she probably thinks this is the one she was meant to debut with, but maybe not that one should be dead forever.
Right. Yeah. I think that's right.
So one thing, I don't know how far you got in our Tracy Sierra one, but you know, if you did get to the end, that we always ask about astrology. And what's your sign? And do you relate? I also always snoop if I can. I think maybe you're a Leo, but I should just wait right. to let you answer.
Right. Leo Virgo.
You are correct.
Yeah, okay.
I am a Leo.
Yeah. Sorry. So am I. I get very excited. Very excited. This cover, by the way, is the most Leo cover.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
It is.
I don't know that much about astrology.
It's okay.
But I think, like, I mean, what I've read about Leos is I used to, like, actually do a lot of those quizzes.
Yeah, sure.
What do you do? What does your sign say about you? But I think what I've learned about Leos is that they really like being the center of attention. And mm-hmm. I personally don't feel that way. I'm a huge introvert, and I actually really like listening to people talk and, like, asking people questions about themselves. But I do think there's, like, elements of it. Like, I think valuing loyalty and, like, friendships and stuff, that's, like, very much me. But also, if you are the experts, please tell me what else a Leo is supposed to be.
Well, I was going to say, before you even said it, because you mentioned earlier about writing about these women and Lulu being so loyal and how friendship is so important here. That screamed Leo to me, too. That is a very big hallmark, the loyalty. The center of attention is true, although I really like to listen to people and ask questions, too. There are introverts who are Leos, though.
Yeah, and center of attention doesn't always mean like me in the
Look
center.
At me.
I mean, I do think an author by nature is the center of attention. You wrote this whole world. You created these voices and these points of view and put them out there for us. But also, don't be wedded to your sun sign.
Yeah,
there is your moon sign, your rising sign, your Mercury is how you communicate. Your Venus is how you connect with other people. I just love that the conversation around astrology has become so much more than just like your horoscope, like what your day is going to be like. I just love the memes that are like, you know, like, this is who a Leo would never date, or, you know, and they're always so on point. They're really, really fun.
Those are fun.
Right? And then I'm like, okay, this is, I got it there. And I love, I think CoStar does it a lot. They're like, check your Mars, check your Venus, because this is really about something that's coming from how you take action or what have you. So don't, you know, it's not all about your sun sign. So.
But also I feel like the other thing is Leos are a fixed sign. So we're the ones that, like, if you start a task, you're going to complete it, like, very goal-oriented.
Discipline.
And, like, disciplined. It's, I mean, from what you've described of yourself and your sort of dual tracking it, like, you're going to start something, you're going to finish it. Like, give a fixed sign a task, they're going to get it done. So I feel like that might track for you.
Well, I really like this interpretation.
As opposed to a cardinal sign, that's what I am. I will start 120 projects and see nothing through. I'm like, oh, I'm bored. I'm bored of that.
Right.
That's why you're full of ideas, though.
Yes.
Always things.
Like, I am.
100%.
That's why I need Kate to help me execute and follow through and stay with this. I mean, the fact that we've been doing this podcast for years is aside from my marriage, is the longest like thing I've done at one time. Because even writing, it's a little bit like,
it's a new idea.
Over, like, someone new, someone, a new book, a new idea,
a new world,
new character. Yep. So. Well, Sophie, we like to end with what you're loving right now. Any shows that you're watching, any books that you're reading that you're just obsessed with that you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I have not had much time to watch TV because of trying to graduate and also working on my second book. But I have been trying, like, I've been getting back into reading books again. And right now I'm reading The Covenant of Water, which it's a monster of a book, but
yes, it is.
Every page is so gorgeous and immersive. So I am really loving reading that. And yeah, besides that, I think I've just
That's an ambitious book to pick up.
I know, when you're, I know.
You could have picked up a little slim guy.
I was say,
like, let me get into this.
If you're a person who wants to read about 50 books a year, that one might slow your count down.
It's okay. I'm ahead, though. I'm ahead on my goals, so I can make time for a fat book.
Okay. See? There you go. It makes sense then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love it.
Oh, Sophie, thank you so much for joining us. This was so much fun. Women of Good Fortune is out now. This is such a fun book. It's like fun if you want the fun, and then there's deeper elements and themes if you want to read into a little deeper. So it's a perfect book, in my opinion.
Thank you so much, Sophie, and good luck with your debut.
Thank you.